At Christmas time in Pine Cove, California, every hotel room was full, and there wasn't a parking space to be found on Cypress Street, where shoppers pumped their chestnuts into an open fire of credit card swipe and spend denial. It smelled of cinnamon and pine, peppermint and joy. This was not the coarse commercialism of a Los Angeles or San Francisco Christmas. This was the refined, sincere commercialism of small-town New England, where a century ago, Norman Rockwell had invented Christmas. This was real. Those words and the town of Pine Cove are the invention of satirist Christopher Moore. The town at Christmas is the setting for his latest novel, The Stupidest Angel. If you're a fan of satire in general, or Christopher Moore in particular, or if you've celebrated the season in climactically inappropriate locations, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Christopher Moore joins us now from the even more climactically inappropriate location, Hawaii Public Radio in Honolulu. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you.
You full of Christmas spirit out there?
I am. I bundled up in my warm flip-flops and my most festive aloha shirt.
Well, it's good to know that the season is spreading that far into the Pacific. Tell us, though, about Pine Cove, this town that you write about in somewhere on the central coast of California. A mystery to them, apparently, as to why people come from San Francisco and Los Angeles to celebrate Christmas there.
Well, it's sort of it's based on a town that actually exists on the central coast called Cambria, and it's sort of a pseudo English village, and so they have a theme driven Christmas, and of course anybody trying to get out of the city, especially a city like Los Angeles, which just doesn't fit Los Angeles very well, can sort of go to this little town that's tucked into pine trees and at least fake Christmas a little bit better, even though it tends to be around 68 degrees even in Pine Cove. So it's not usually there's not a weather problem. In the book there's a big storm coming, but normally Christmas in Pine Cove is about 68 degrees. The biggest preparation you have to do is to maybe pack a sweater.
And the other thing that's inappropriate, well, you might go to an ocean resort to frolic in the surf, not in Pine Cove.
No, well, that's the area where the elephant seals nest, and consequently, it's a big shark cafeteria. So not only is the water dark and cold, there's things in it that eat you. So generally, not the kind of place where you want to frolic in the water. You can kind of get frightened looking at the water there.
So amidst this unlikely setting for Christmas, and apparently you come to the conclusion the reason Christmas is celebrated there is so much is because of the pine trees themselves. Look like Christmas trees.
They are, in fact, Christmas trees. Monterey pines grow astoundingly rapidly, 20 feet a year, and they're cultivated for Christmas trees because of that. Well, one of the last stands of natural Monterey pines is in Pine Cove or Cambria, and so it feels like Christmas there as much as any place that you're going to find in California.
Mm-hmm. With the exception that in Pine Cove, as opposed to Cambria, Santa Claus is killed with a shovel very early in the book.
Well, yeah, I think that's something that we all have wanted to do for years, and I thought that it was something to get out of the way early on. And then it sort of set the story on a pace that I thought the readers could really relate to, you know.
You'd think so. I mean, every Christmas comes complete with a zombie attack, doesn't it?
Well, in my world, yeah, in my world it does. It was sort of I wanted to deal with that It's a Wonderful Life angel sort of showing you your life thing, except this angel comes to grant a child's Christmas wish, and this kid witnesses a sort of a fraternal organization Santa who is murdered with a shovel, and his fondest wish is that Santa come back to life for Christmas, and the angel that's given this assignment is not the brightest halo in the host, and so when he grants that wish, he brings everybody who's buried in this churchyard back to life, and consequently the Christmas Eve party that's going on there turns into a pretty classic zombie attack.
Mm-hmm. Of course, this you think you were being kind in describing him as the stupidest angel.
Yeah, I just didn't have an adjective that went more than stupidest.
Uh-huh.
This angel is Actually, he was created in my book Lamb, which was a retelling of the Gospels, and I've sort of reprised him here in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a history of not being very bright. He announced the first nativity 10 years late, and so he's been sent back after 2,000 years to basically screw up another Christmas. And in this, in bringing the zombies in, I thought that, you know, Christmas is a time when you want to include everybody. And I thought, well, the dead have to listen to people yammering on in the graveyard, you know, like crack-smoking speed daters all year. And so when these zombies come back, not only are they craving brains, they also know the secrets of everybody in town because they've been listening. And so they're sort of attacking this church and shouting out everybody's, you know, secrets about, you know, who's sleeping with whom and you know, what everybody's proclivities are. So it's a big community, warm, brain-eating Christmas fest.
The subtitle of the book is A Heartwarming Tale of Christmas Terror. Tell me, did you grow up with Christmas trauma yourself?
I actually did. One gets asked that a lot when you write a book like this and include, you know, killing Santa with a shovel and zombies and so forth. My father was a state highway patrolman in Ohio who worked the 4 to midnight shift, and as a kid, I was like many kids. I wouldn't go to bed, you know, on Christmas Eve because it was too exciting until Santa came. And my father was also, while he was a very good highway patrolman, he was not particularly mechanically inclined. And I think I was about 5, and he had to build a bicycle before dawn. And so when he came home at midnight and saw through the front window that I was still up, he drew his service revolver and fired it into the air, then came in and said, "I've shot Santa off the roof, Chris, you can go to bed." And thus giving him the time to build a bicycle before morning. And
Because you were down at the emergency room being treated for shock.
I have to think that affected both my sense of humor and my attitude toward Christmas.
I could imagine. Now, am I wrong in reading your book that you may have been raised Catholic?
No, I wasn't raised Catholic. I was sort of it's good that you picked up on that because I actually was taken care of during my elementary school years by a Catholic family 5 days a week because my mother worked until 7 o'clock at night. So I thought I was Catholic for years. I didn't eat meat on Friday and you know sort of participated in the scrap metal drive and all the things mm-hmm. that this Catholic pseudo family I had did. But I didn't really get the guilt, so it was actually the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm. Grew up wondering, what's all this kingdom and the power and the glory stuff? You know, new lines added? What is this?
Interesting.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, at my house it was First Church of NFL, but then across the street where I spent, you know, 5 days a week, it was sort of a lot of icons on the wall and a lot of sort of guilt. But it's all good. It all worked.
It all worked. We're talking with Christopher Moore. He's the author of several books, including his most recent called The Stupidest Angel, A Heartwarming Tale of Christmas Terror. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. And this is Melinda. Melinda's calling from Rochester, New York.
Hi, Chris. Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because you are one of the favorite authors in my family. Ranging from myself and my 17-year-old blue-haired nephew to my father, who is actually a Catholic deacon. And your books get passed around the family as soon as they get bought. They get read as quickly as possible and passed around and often bought many times.
Lots That's my demographic, there. By the way, the blue-haired 17-year-old Catholic deacon.
Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Together, it's a great combination.
Actually, it is.
But we were very, very excited to see Raziel come back.
That's the angel.
That's the name of the stupidest angel.
Exactly. Yeah.
We loved him in Lamb, and that was the first book that my nephew had read. And after reading Fluke, he said, "Well, where's the angel?" I said, "Don't worry, he'll be back."
He'll be back.
Excellent. Yeah, there was a number of characters are brought back from other books. The book doesn't depend on that. I mean, if you've never read my stuff before, you can come to this and you're not going to need a map. But because I've set a couple of books in Pine Cove, I did. There's about a half a dozen characters that appeared in earlier books.
Hmm.
The fruit bat was hard to work in. The rest of them were sort of natural for Christmas.
The fruit bat steals the book. I have to tell you that. I mean, Raziel is good. Yeah, I love the fruit bat.
Well, it's never a great book without a fruit bat in it.
That's probably true.
I had a lot of requests for that. To be honest, it's not that easy to work a chatty fruit bat into a plot. But I thought, okay, he'll probably fit with all this other, all these other elements. No one will notice, you know, sort of if you make enough noise, no one will see that, you know, you've left the radio on or something. So,
okay. And one of the interesting things when Raziel, the angel, arrives in Pine Cove, of course, he's mistaken at first for a pervert.
Yeah, because he asks for a child. He's been given the assignment to grant the Christmas wish of a child. And so he walks into a bar on a, you know, Monday afternoon and says, I'm looking for a child. And at first they think a particular child that may have been lost while Christmas shopping. And he says, no, any child will be fine. And so and he's wearing a long coat to conceal his wings and so forth. So, yeah, everybody in town immediately, puts on an APB for a child molester. But in fact, it is an angel of the Lord.
Here's a description in the book. By the way, Melinda, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Yeah.
The Archangel Raziel found after some consideration he did not care for being run over by a Swedish automobile. As far as things dirt side went, he liked Snickers bars, barbecued pork chips, and pinochle. He also enjoyed Spider-Man, Days of Our Lives, and Star Wars. Although the concept of fictional film eluded the angel, and he thought they were all documentaries.
That's true. In fact, in the book Lamb, where he's locked in a hotel room in St. Louis with the unknown apostle forcing him to write a gospel, Raziel won't believe that the soap operas aren't happening as he's watching them, and that they're not real. And finally, when he's brought us a copy of Soap Opera Digest, the apostle convinces him that it's a book of prophecy because it actually knows what's going to happen in the days of our lives in advance. Yeah.
And talk about your apocrypha. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's, he's a lot of fun because he has sort of problems making those connections, but he keeps going on about how he's good with weather. And he was actually in charge of the plague of fire during the plagues of Egypt and so forth. So, he doesn't always understand exactly what weather includes, but he insists that he's good with weather.
Let's get another caller on the line. Steve is with us from Lafayette, Louisiana.
Hi. I've read, I think, all the books except this latest one. You have a lot of spirituality in them. Even Coyote Blue starts out as a complete satire, and then it goes pretty deep. How did you get to that?
I've been fascinated by faith for a long time. I don't want to jump around too much here, Neil, but he mentioned Coyote Blue, which is my book that's about Crow Indians. And what motivated that book was I had run across the trickster god Coyote, which seemed just an avatar of irony. And it's my belief that the most powerful force in the universe is irony. And I don't really have anything to back that up. It's just what I think. And so I thought a god that exists for that purpose, to sort of deliver irony, should be brought into the modern world. And that was the whole motivation behind that book. But most of the books have some examination of the act of faith, albeit in a goofy way.
And faith in each other, faith in people as well as faith in greater powers, if you will.
Absolutely, a community. And I think that's one of the things that I like to think I learned from Steinbeck, is that if you write about flawed people and they ennoble themselves, and I have a great gallery of screw-ups in this book and in all my books, but you sort of define courage by overcoming your limitations. And so I have people who are fraught with limitations but tend to distinguish themselves in not only silly but in courageous ways. And that imbues them with a faith in one another a lot of times. So especially in this Pine Cove book, you have a lot of people depending upon one another to do things that they're not particularly qualified to do.
So do you expect to be the Grand Marshal of the next Christmas parade in Cambria, California?
Could be. Really, if you own a pickup truck, you pretty much can get that job. It's not something where you have to really write a book, but if I were rallying for it and wanted to fly to the mainland, I suppose they would invite me to do that.
Steve, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Christopher Moore, thanks for coming down to Honolulu to speak with us today. Merry Christmas to you.
You too, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Christopher Moore, satirist and the author of several novels, including Lamb and Fluke. The latest is The Stupidest Angel, a heartwarming tale of Christmas terror. And he joined us from the studios of Hawaii Public Radio in Honolulu. Have a happy Christmas, everybody. A great holiday and a great weekend. Ira Flatow will be here tomorrow. We'll see you Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.